Hello and welcome to Project 2028. Thank you so much for clicking on our podcast and for listening to this episode. Welcome to the special Election Day edition of our podcast. So in this episode, we are going to be doing things like our personal prediction, who we think would win, updates on polling, as there have been some changes in some of the most trusted polls. We're also going to talk about the different scenarios of Election Day, when we would be able to see results, which is going to be not Tuesday, not tomorrow, most likely. They might be able to make a prediction. Usually they can, but with a close race like this, mm-hmm. They probably won't be able to.
We are also going to talk about how the younger generations have become more involved politically, along with the opposite side of that, how it's very hard for people in college to vote. And possibly more. Now, let's dive right in.
Okay, so I'm going to start off with my personal opinion. So if you go back to our maps from the September 17th episode called Election Predictions and General Recap, on our Instagram, you will see all our maps. So I'm going to reference mine. I pretty much agree with most of my map. I don't really know if there's anything I would necessarily change. I was pretty, positive with my prediction when I made this map. The only thing is Nevada might go blue, and that would, I believe, actually change my result if Nevada did go blue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it would. So that would be my difference. So on my map, I have Trump winning. Personally, I do think he is going to win. You ask anyone around me for the past two and a half years, I've been kind of saying he has a higher chance of winning. Mm-hmm. Especially against Joe, I didn't think there was even a chance. And now that we have Kamala running against him, I think there's a greater percentage that he loses. However, I still do believe he will be our next president. And then Luciana is going to talk about her map, and then we'll talk about how our maps are a bit similar.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there aren't many differences between our maps, except I have Wisconsin going blue. I think that Wisconsin will end up blue, and I don't have any of the districts of Maine going red, which honestly, I would change that. I'd go back and change that district of Maine to be red, because I just think that's how it's going to end up. And I'm not sure about Nevada. I think Nevada is just going to be so tricky, that kind of like Elle said. And also Pennsylvania. I think those are going to be...
I don't mean to cut you off. Go. I agree. I think those are going to be the two big deciding mm-hmm. states in this election.
I definitely agree. And I also think that our election apps are very similar. There's pictures of them on our Instagram, which you can check out. You will see we have two different states, which all... We also have two different outcomes. Mine is Kamala, hers is Trump. So it just comes down to these couple crucial states mm-hmm. that will decide the election.
Yeah. And same with Ryan's. I think the biggest difference between Ryan's map and my map, because we both have Trump winning, is he has it a lot closer, and he has mm-hmm. Nevada going blue.
He also has Pennsylvania going blue.
So do I.
But we all do.
I have half of Maine, two of the Maine districts going red. He only has one of the Maine districts going red. And then that's, I guess the biggest difference in ours that gives us that closer
mm-hmm.
prediction. And Ryan will, he's not with us right now, but he's coming. So I'm going to insert his opinion here.
All right, so now that they've kind of given their takes on some of the Electoral College stuff, only a day away. Right now, it's around 3 o'clock, day before election night, just to kind of timestamp it, because things, as I'll reference later, can change a lot in the final day, not polling-wise, but just race, the way it works. And I'll kind of talk about that later, how there can be some stuff that could be pretty monumental happening in the next few hours and days of you listening to this podcast. But first of all, I think we have to talk about my electoral election map. I think I'm going to stick with most certainly. I think the polling in the states that I've chosen pretty stands up. I think the Rust Belt. If I had to change one thing in the Rust Belt, so obviously the Rust Belt states are going to be more in the eastern, northeast kind of side of the United States. If I had to change anything, I might flip my Pennsylvania to Trump. Right now, it's even. It's been a slight 0.1 point advantage for Trump, which is nothing for all intents and purposes for the past week or so, since we've seen kind of the polling change. And if you look at the past two elections that have had Trump as a candidate, he's made strides of anywhere from last election cycle, it was around 3 points. And in 2020, it was around 2.5 points in the models, just weeks coming before the election. So Trump has this little knack for pulling it out right at the end of the election. It's quite impressive, and it's shot up his chances of victory to nearly 54% and 56% respectively in the election models as they have been ran today. So if I had to reverse anything, I would swing Pennsylvania. I might swing some of the Midwestern states back to them, kind of on the left side of the Sun, the Rust Belt. And then I think this, I'll stay with my Sun Belt with North Carolina, Georgia, and project a Trump win. But that kind of brings me relatively quickly,
which is polling that he asked to talk about, and we think he is best fit to talk about because of his knowledge about the topic. So he will get into that in a minute.
We're going to do a bit of transition into polling, mainly federal, but some House and Senate stuff too. And this is kind of going to bring us back to just the day before polling. The last polls we're getting were kind of published this weekend. So let's get into it. House, Senate, let's go. Right now, nationally, he leads by Harris leads by 0.9 points nationally, which is well within the margin of error nationally. And in every swing state is within the margin of error. So you could very well see, and I think a lot of people could be expecting, a victory decisively on election night for one candidate. Now, it's very possible that there isn't one and that it's very close like it was in 2020. But also, and hopefully they've corrected, but nobody really knows until the election's over, the polls have systemically underrepresented Trump voters in the past two elections, leading. Joe Biden was up by 9-ish points at some point in the 2020 campaign, and Hillary Clinton had an 80% chance of winning on election night. So the polls are pretty good at systemically under polling and underrepresenting Trump voters. However, they may have fixed that, but I think that's certainly one of the points. They've done some studies on it, and it's getting better, but it's certainly not fixed. So I think that could be represented in the polls. Obviously, the Republicans have a much higher chance of winning in a specific scenario where they lose they win the Electoral College but lose a popular vote. Democrats only have one or two scenarios out of every few thousand where they win the Electoral College but lose the popular vote just because of demographics. But then if you look, and I'll update this later kind of on the Senate and the way the House is looking, that it flips nearly. But if you're looking at the presidential race, it is extremely close, extremely tight. You could see a decisive victory on election night for either candidate, or possibly more likely, it could take days, weeks, and a lot of lawsuits for this all to get fixed. It's certainly one of the closest elections that we've seen polling-wise in the past few decades, certainly since I've been alive, and it is leading up into a really good election night. Hopefully you're listening to this before. If you're listening to this after, you might have some more insight. But that is certainly where it's going. And I kind of want to segue a bit to the Senate and House models. First, we'll start with the Senate, just with precedence. And the Republicans, this is kind of an anomaly. They're projected to win it 92% of the time. That's due to just the fact that Republican seats, for every Republican seat that's up, there's nearly two or three Democratic seats. So Democrats would have to pull off some pretty incredible odds there just to regain their own seats and then flip seats in places where it's pretty hard, like Texas, flipping Ted Cruz's seat, where it is possible, but it's certainly on the harder side of victories. There's been record amounts of money spent in the Senate races by both the Democrats and the Republicans. But, you know, not necessarily in the most useful ways, as it's kind of uncompetitive. It would be quite the shock to see any Democratic or non-Republican win. And obviously, the Democrats and Republicans could split, obviously, and the presidential election could decide. But that's also another low chance contingency scenario. Finally, kind of to pivot a bit to the House, more interesting, more fun to watch on election night specifically. There's just more seats. It's more chaos. And it is extremely likely. If you look at the graph, it's identical almost on both sides for the standard distribution of outcomes, which shows just an incredibly, incredibly close race. Right now, it's out of 1,000 simulations, 538 has Republicans winning 506 of them, and the Democrats winning 494. Obviously, every single seat's up for election this year. They need 218 to have a majority, and it is going to be extremely close, possibly, and more likely, because of the fact that there are so many more seats, it is going to be closer than the presidential election. However, we are seeing, and this is getting into the intricacies, but there's a bit less split ticket voting these days than there was most certainly 20 or 30 years ago. But there is still a bit, which could lead to a split Senate or a split presidency between the Congress, which would be certainly an interesting dynamic. The Republicans, if I do some quick math in my head here, 90%, 20, yeah, okay. They have around a 21% chance of getting a full sweep of all three of the major governing and enforcement bodies, the presidency and then all of Congress. Whereas Democrats do just basically the Congress have around a 2% chance because it would be so slim to get all three, including the Congress. So it's always possible with some systemic polling error that would be quite amazing, but it would be quite shocking for the pollsters. But it would be certainly within, you know, not one in a million bounds. But that's kind of going to wrap up at least my part of the polling. I think Luciana is going to talk about it, or she did talk about it. So hopefully that kind of brings you some insights just on election night, kind of about what we're seeing, what the pollsters are seeing, and kind of what the demographics are looking like for the voters and in the Rust Belt and Sun Belt states that are for contention in this election. So thanks for listening to my part, and then we'll get back to someone else.
Hi, y'all. This is Luciana, just adding on one last thing. So this isn't, I don't think this is really relevant to the outcomes, but it's just something that I thought was kind of interesting. So there is Professor Alan Lichtman, who has predicted 9 out of the last 10 elections correctly, and he thinks that Kamala is going to win. He's been interviewed about that recently, 9 hours ago, as of the time we're recording that, and he says, no, I still stand by that. I still think she's gonna win. I'm just sure about it. And he's been very correct in the past, but the Gallup poll, which is not always, which predicts, like, the popular vote, not the Electoral College, popular vote. I knew this before Ryan yelled at me about it. I'm mentioning that. But the Gallup poll, the Gallup poll is predicting a Trump win. Yes? So it's kind of interesting that these two very accurate sources, while the Gallup poll, again, predicts the popular vote, they're kind of having contradicting opinions. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see which one ends up being correct. Thank you very much.
And to add a bit on to Luciana's point, like we talked about earlier, national popular vote polls, they're kind of antithetical to election. Obviously, they can show sentiment and all that. But that's kind of beside the point. Something I did also want to talk about that adds to her thing is there's another guy kind of competing right now, the founder of 538, who no longer works here, a guy named Adam Silver. He's a gambler, sports bettor, basically a statistical little wizard, and he has founded quite a few polling places, and he right now he since Biden dropped out of the race, he has predicted a Trump win. That's based off a bit of different methodology. Obviously, Lichtman uses the 13 keys to the White House, which is a set of 13 true or false questions, and Silver uses a bit more different methodology, you could say, based on percentages, national demographics and stuff like that. But both of them are kind of going to be competing in the horse race in this election for credence, and they've been doing a bit of online sparring about each other's models, but it's been quite fun to watch. So that's going to kind of finish up this episode.
Actually, I would like
Oh, has him in.
So, Kamala Harris is up in the Ann Seltzer polls. Ryan does not enjoy the way she chooses to pick her sample base that she uses for her poll predictions. However, I thought it would be important to kind of mention, obviously, Kamala.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, like, personal bias in some senses are super dangerous, and we see it a lot. But it's just another kind of poll to add into what has been changing.
Yeah, no, just to add to that, obviously, the more polls, the better. Some of the polling, sampling, Ancestor does bad, but it's close to the national average, so it doesn't look like there's anything too systemic between her stuff and the stuff. It just sometimes that kind of stuff has a hard time predicting, as I said, the national electoral vote, because that's based on a multitude of factors, demographics in the states, split ticket voting. But I digress. All of them, they're correct. And that'll finish up the polling segment. So, yeah.
Okay, the next thing we're going to discuss is the different scenarios for when we get the results. So there are a couple opinions on this. I read some articles saying that they think we're going to get them the night of. People's reasoning for this is kind of like, oh, well, with COVID, almost all of the ballots were like mail-in ballots. So with fewer of those, it's going to take less time to count. I've also heard people saying, no, it's going to take even longer. Like, we're not going to know what the results for a really long time. Elle, which one do you think is more likely?
Yeah, I think we're going to see them, like, the complete results around Saturday or Sunday of this week.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we will obviously get some states, like California, like Illinois, night of, because those are super predictable, always go blue states. Texas is another one. We won't really see a flip in. Oh, bless you. We won't really see a flip in who has control of the state if they're very historically one tipping way. But other than that, I think, especially with some states like Georgia, where you need to count every single ballot, that's definitely going to push us back. This is the first time we've had this in an election.
That's definitely my main kind of thought when I think about my personal prediction is Sunday. I remember last year we got the results on a Saturday. This year I'm pushing that to Sunday because of that restriction in Georgia. And also, I think there's still going to be a very significant number of mail-in ballots this year. I think last year people realized how easy it was, so they're kind of going to do it again this year.
Yeah, I really agree with that. I also think that some of the closer to call states, they're going to have to count more ballots.
Yeah, definitely.
There are going to be more ballots counted in states like Pennsylvania, Nevada, ones we've mentioned already earlier this episode, as well as Michigan, just because those are harder to call states. I also think there's going to be a lot of difficulties, especially we've seen in the past week, ballot boxes being set on fire. Those people now have to re-vote. We have to make sure that their vote gets actually counted. We have to make sure, like, there have been just ballots, like, boxes of ballots just left on the streets. Those have to be made sure that it's not voting twice. I think we've had a lot of issues in the past week, and definitely we're going to see them on Election Day itself that is going to have to delay the results.
Oh, I definitely agree with Elle there. My other thought was, Elle, do you think there's going to be a higher voting turnout this time, or like a higher voter turnout? Because I think I've seen a lot of people that are like, well, I don't care either way. I don't like either candidate. But I've also seen a lot of people that are like, no, this is my first time voting because I'm really passionate about this election. So I'm just curious to see what you think, or if those are going to kind of cancel out and it'll end up the same.
Yeah, so I think that we will see a higher turnout of voters. I think since 2020, we have a new, like, the four-year group of people who weren't able to vote in that election. It seems like they are a lot more passionate about their opinions, and they are more eager to vote than we've seen in past generations. I also think that it has been made very clear how important this election is, how our country could really go in two very different directions. And I think people really want to do their part to ensure that their candidate has a better chance of winning. This is definitely for both sides. We've seen a lot more liberal teens, kind of, and we'll touch on this later, kind of talk about this subject more publicly and openly. But I think that's more because, again, we'll touch on this later, I think it's a little harder to put on social media and stuff like that, conservative opinions, just because of the way social media is wired. But
I'd also like to say it depends what social media you're on.
Oh, for sure.
Because, like, if you go on Twitter,
for
Twitter's a very conservative, but then, like, TikTok is gonna be more liberal than Facebook.
Yeah. And it definitely comes to, like, looking at generations. Like, the younger generation is more on TikTok, Snapchat, which I don't really know if you consider that social media, but that's another thing. And then middle age is Instagram.
Instagram mostly.
Right? Yeah. Threads.
Instagram stays pretty moderate, I feel like. It kind of, I'd say it's been leaning more Democratic recently, but I definitely see my fair share of both. I think the trad wives have really taken over Instagram.
Yes, for sure. And then, obviously, Twitter or X.
Mm-hmm.
And
Facebook.
Facebook are more older, which makes them lean more conservative, just because of how the generations play out.
And if you're curious about learning more about the generational demographics, you should listen to one of our most recent episodes. The one just before this, where we discuss what groups of voters are leaning which way.
Yeah.
So we just kind of discussed this in our last segment. We also discussed this in our demographics episode, but the younger generations have really been turning up to talk about what they believe in online, in person, starting Instagram channels and newsletters and talking to their friends, starting podcasts just to get the word out there, encourage people to vote. And I think the most common idea is these are old people deciding the future of young people. And I think that's something that a lot of people are really upset about, especially the most important issue in the election for young women is abortion, which it hasn't really been an issue that was on the ballot before in the same sense it is now. So I think that's really going to affect how many young people like show up to vote. But one of the things that's really hard about this is, people in college. So freshmen in college, if they're going to a school in a different state, which lots of them are, they can't vote from that state. In most of these states, they can't vote from that state unless they've been a resident for over 3 months. So unless they move in before August 5th, then they can't cast their ballots as a resident of that state.
Which would be hard considering most colleges start mid to late August.
Mm-hmm.
And we see here, where we live, college starts in mid-September.
Yeah. And, I mean, as great as it is to vote and as important as it is, it's very unrealistic to expect people to be there a month early so that they can be a resident in that state to vote. Like, that's just absolutely unrealistic. And then it's really just hard and a long process to get those absentee ballots from your states. And it's, as much as these college students care, it's kind of a tedious process to go through when you're trying to, like, move in and get settled. So I just think that one of the most important things is when you're trying to encourage this young generation to be political and vocal and be activists and serve their community, you have to make sure that their voices are heard. And by having all these rules that really hinder their ability to vote, you're not doing that. And it's just gonna, I think that's gonna kind of affect how they view, like, politics.
Yeah, I couldn't have said that better myself. It was a great kind of explanation about college voters. I'm gonna backtrack a little to the younger generation. So obviously, as people who are 14, 15, we are obviously unable to vote. Next election, we will be able to vote. And I think something that people aren't really realizing is what is happening in the government now, what is being voted on, what is being passed, directly affects not only our lives for the next 4 years, our lives until we're dead, and our lives until our kids are dead, so on and so forth. These are really important issues, especially every election, but especially this one when it comes to policy things, migration, abortion, mm-hmm. education, any and really all of the big players in this election. So when you don't have the mindset that what is being decided on now affects you, you don't care about it. I know from our personal listening base, it's a lot of people in the 30 plus category, mm-hmm. which obviously there are some younger people listening, which we thank you. But I know like very few of our friends are listening because they just don't realize it affects them. Mm-hmm. Ryan, he's obviously still not here with us, but he was telling me the story today, how people were asking him about it in lunch today. And he said it was the only time all year that people have said anything political to him because they're just now caring because the election's tomorrow and we don't have school tomorrow. Like people are excited that we don't have school, but they don't understand the reason why. And our school actually just sent an email about 15 minutes ago saying like how it's important to know what's happening, but people don't read those emails. Like these are not like topics that are being discussed. Like they're not sharing this information in classes. Like this would be a really good thing to talk about in our history classes.
Oh yeah,
especially as learning about history is one of the main ways we can figure out how we want to vote, because mm-hmm. you're trying to obviously prevent the bad things that you don't like from happening again, and you want to go back and I guess renew the things that happened that you liked. Yeah, and then if we move to, like, TikTok, we are obviously seeing people going on live. We see this on Instagram, mm-hmm. too, kind of debating people on the spot. Yeah. Those are really entertaining. They get a lot of people kind of interested because mm-hmm. it's obviously, like, they're talking about statistics and policy, but they're making it more fun.
Yeah, definitely.
Just a debate setting in general is considered more fun to listen to watch. And then if we move over to YouTube, we're seeing those same debaters. There are a couple that are more prevalent than others, debating some of the biggest, I guess, conservatives. And we also are seeing this on the flip side, where conservative teens are debating, or teens, younger generation, are debating some of the more well-known conservatives. Yeah. Me and Luchana, one of the, like, biggest people we're seeing of this is the Jubilee YouTube channel, which has a lot of other stuff, but Ryan, sorry y'all, Ryan was laughing at us, but obviously don't get your information from there, but it's definitely a good source of entertainment when it comes to something a little more lighthearted about the election while still mm-hmm. trying to kind of learn a slight bit more on why people are choosing to vote on for the candidate they're choosing to vote for. Okay, we're kind of gonna go on a little bit of a tangent now. So obviously we talked about the different scenarios, the different, like, things that we're going to see when it comes to the election. But now we're going to talk about the overall kind of atmosphere, how people are going to react when states start coming out mm-hmm. and when the results obviously get announced.
Okay, I think this is, pardon me, this is one of the most intense elections we're going to see. I think that there will be a lot of very strong feelings, no matter who wins. I think last year, obviously, we saw with January 6th, like, people were upset enough to riot. And I think we're definitely gonna see some of that this year. I don't know if it's gonna be on the same scale. I think, especially on January 6th of this year, there will be some protections to make sure that something like that does not happen. But I do think that there will be a little bit of chaos in some areas. I think there's just going to be some very high emotions. I think on social media, we're going to see a lot of, like, arguing and upsets. And I don't know, I just think it's going to be very, very intense. And I think either way, it's not going to be perfect. And I think people will be very upset no matter who wins. But I hope that we can learn from last year and put some better protections in place for those very important days. Make sure, like, all the important people in the election are protected when the results are announced for a little bit after. And then especially, again, on January 6th. What do you think, Al?
Yeah. I'm actually going to ask you a question.
Oh.
So we've obviously seen upwards of 2 assassination attempts on former President Trump. Do you think we will see another one? Do you think it depends on if he wins or not? Do you think there's a chance that something could happen on Election Day? Do you think that Kamala could receive a threat at her life, something like that? Do you think it will, I guess my question is, do you think it will get that intense, that lethal? Or do you think it'll be a little more, not light-hearted, light-spirited, but less aggressive in the sense of setting something on fire, kind of things we saw during, like, the BLM protests?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question. I'm sure it's something that all of the security guards are taking into account, but I think that all of the scenarios you mentioned with, like, assassination attempts both on the day of or after the election and depending on who wins for both candidates are very possible. I think that the security teams have learned a lot from this summer of violence against former President Trump, and I think that they're gonna try very hard to protect the candidates, but I definitely think it's a real possibility, especially I think for me it would be after they announce the election. I think that there's a chance that it could get heated. So I definitely think that you're right, Elle. That definitely seems like a possibility.
All right, and that'll wrap up Project 2028. And that'll be kind of it for today. Make sure to vote. And I'm going to pass it over to Luciana to have a little speech about the social media.
Yeah, just thank you so much for listening to this special edition episode. These are some of the most important episodes because they are coming out at a time when they are most important, right after either something big is about to happen or after it's already happened. Okay.
And if you enjoyed this episode, our Instagram is at project2028.podcast. Please follow us, like our stuff, get informed about new updates, new episodes, anything important going on in the world. If you didn't like this episode, we're not on Instagram. And also, if you have feedback, if you have topics you'd like to hear discussed, if you have questions for us, whatever it may be, anything you want to ask your hosts, please, please, please email us at project2028.pod@gmail.com. Thank you so, so much. Please go out and vote and have an amazing evening.
Wait, before you go, I just wanted to tell you that this is the last episode of this season, and the new season will be kicking off, starting with election results and everything to know about who will be the next president of the United States.